Blog Talk Radio.
Come on now, let me hear you.
We are the world.
As we get ready tonight, that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. movement tonight, I want to share with you lots of things that's going on in the world. And I just want to share with you tonight what Dr. King.
We must also realize that the problems of racial injustice and economic injustice cannot be solved.
Dr. Martin Luther King, and he just said that the problem of America is race. We've seen it in Nashville. We've seen it in Mississippi, Jackson, Mississippi, down in Arkansas, Alabama, and right here in Chicago as we break in a brand new mayor who was on racial basis. So what I'm saying on this Monday, the Dr. King movement, the spirit of Dr. King is still real. And what happened in Nashville and what happened with the gun lobby and those Republicans in Nashville held up the gun law, stopped the killing, saved the babies. So that's one of the things that I'm talking about tonight. The killing of our children that's all over the country. Not only black, white children being killed, it's because our government is not taking care of the job. Anytime you got kids 9, 10 years old marching on the Capitol saying, stop the killing, save the babies. And just now we had another shooting in Louisville, Kentucky. We're going to have shootings over and over until our government, the Democrats and Republicans, come together and say, let's ban these assault weapons that's going on in our community. So that's the most important thing that I see that's going on in 2023, the killing and the violence that's going on in our country. It's more violence in America than anywhere in the world. And this is supposed to be the land of the free, home of the brave. We got veterans that fought in Vietnam and Korea and fought in Afghanistan war, and they come home and can't see a doctor, a dentist or something. You know, it's the problem now for the people of the world to come out and speak about this crime that's going on. And I would like to say the evil that's going on within our own neighborhood, the human rights of people to live and to go to the store and to shop. It's very important. Dr. King said one of the basic things is racial separation and racial bigamy. And that's what's going on. There's a law for blacks, there's a law for whites. We got 95% of black males and females in jail, as I speak, and most of them are political prisoners, and they store it up. Then we have an undergird of policemen that belongs to these organizations that killing black men, shooting them, and ain't asking no questions. So it's serious on this Monday to talk about your freedom freedom to go to the store, freedom to shop, freedom to go to the mall right now. I want to say this. There's going to be some more shooting in these schools. There's going to be some more shooting in the malls and in the churches and in the colleges and even on the street until the people wake up and say, let's change the law of these guns. But you can't change the law when you got big business, you got the Rifle Association paying trillions of dollars to the politicians. So the Republicans in Nashville don't want to hear nothing the people say. All they doing, they getting millions of dollars for guns. They getting millions of dollars. And the blood is on the hands of the politicians. And they have the audacity to kick the black politicians out. And they left the white woman. They said, well, the white woman said it. She said it was race. Malcolm X said in the 20th century, and Dr. King, that the most serious problem in America is race, black and white. We see it on the job. We see it in the school. We see it in the music department. We see it all over the country. It's going on. And when Dr. King speaks of it, we have to be able to let blacks have jobs and money and move to the next level. If America's going to be great, it's already great. Because you know who made America great? Our ancestors. Our ancestors were brought here in slavery from Africa in chains. And they work from day, every day, every night. They work from day to night, and they get paid. Everybody else got reparation, but the black man. Some of you don't want to believe that, but that's what happened, that we did not get reparation. And you can say, oh, you want to one day say, well, I voted for the white guy because he can do better than the black. I want to tell you something. You cannot look in the mirror at yourself and say you're all right, because you're not all right. We got in Inglewood right now, they're fighting for a decent grocery store in Chicago, that we got a delta. In the black community, we don't have enough hospitals, enough doctors, enough lawyers. We're in a delta. If you name the city, Chicago, Detroit, California, all over, and our government is slow to move for the people. Trillions of dollars being spent over the years for money going from America. $1 trillion being spent over in Ukraine, money coming from America. Taxpayers' money that's upholding these wars and saying it's all right. Big corporation is not saying nothing. The big corporation is letting it go on. But like Dr. King said, we got to change the scenario of what's going on. And I want to tell you tonight, this is the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. movement. And what Dr. King started is not finished. Dr. King was a man talking about feed the hungry, clothes the naked, and talk about educate our children. Biden said when he get in office, all college would be free. It ain't happened. You can go to college and get an education, you got to pay. It's all about economics. It's about the money going into the wrong hand, the rich getting richer and the poor getting poorer. It reminds me of Pharaoh had the Egyptian. The Egyptian had Pharaoh said that the Hebrews was in slavery. And right now we're caught up in that situation where your sons, your daughters might be killed on the way to school. Now mothers is scared to send their kids to school because little Junior might not come back. Little Susan might not come home. and she's 9 and 10 years old because of the gun lobbies, because of the gun, and won't nobody stop it. Anytime you got children 10 and 11 years old marching to tell the Congress and tell the people, children, move the guns. Kids are scared. Children are scared to go to school because they might get shot. Parents is not responsible for the guns in their home. It's serious human rights situation where blacks are killing blacks, whites are killing whites. But you're so aware, Russia is killing Ukrainian white folks. In Mississippi and Arkansas, we're killing each other. For what? Because nobody said, let's stop making these rifles that they use. What you gonna do with a machine gun to go hunting? It don't work. So some of the things, Jerry, I'm gonna tell you, Jerry, tonight, that this situation that's going on within America got to change. It got to change with the people saying that we must stop the slave debates. We got to go to Washington and ask for reparation for economic. This is about economic growth. It's about you and your business. It's about you being able to buy a home and the banks being able to not foreclose on the loan. And people all over the world is getting money from America. But here's Americans right here cannot get money. Black is the traditional American. I'm a Native American black, and you are Native American black. And what that means, that you was him before anybody came. You was him before the Italians came. You was him before the Jews came. You was already here. Your ancestors have built this country, and we ain't got paid yet. You can play football, basketball. We're talking about feed the hungry, clothes naked. We're living in a situation now where every person, the pastors, got the most segregated hour in America Sunday morning. Because the Jews go to their church, the Baptists go, the Catholics, all of that go. But ain't nobody saying, let's bring peace to the world. And that's what we got to be, bringing peace to our world. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was a prophet before his time. And one thing he said in his meeting in Chicago, that we have to be able to change what's going on. When Dr. King was in Memphis, Tennessee, he said, seems like this country don't want to respect the black man and his words and his gifts. So we have to go back and tell these major corporations, cut us in or cut it out. Still a problem in America with the color skin. If you black, get back. And it have always been that way in the politics. Right now, you got the Democrats and Republicans. Ain't man, one of them really reaching out to help the black man. They throw the homosexual in now. It ain't about the homosexual. It's about black and white. It's about the white supremacists controlled in the country and controlled in people of color. And Dr. Clark said it. Dr. Anderson said it. The only way, you have to sit down and make your mind up tonight that you're going to move to the level of being successful. Whatever you're going through, you know, you go shopping, the food going up. Why is the food? Government paid people not to farm. all down in the black belt. Now, what's happening? Now we got a food shortage. And the storms and the floods are coming because our government has not dealt properly with these weather balloons. And I want to tell you, that balloon they shut down. The people had to call the Washington and say, it's a small balloon going across our area. And they finally shut it down. And this is what they told people. It was a weather. We know it was weather. Look at the storms we had in Arkansas, in Chicago, in Kansas City, North Dakota, South Dakota, all the way around. That's not normal weather. That weather is made up in the laboratory and released. Chemtrails, what Michael Jackson talks about. Y'all think he's crazy. Prince talked about chemtrails. He said Michael Jackson was crazy. Prince was crazy. And people talked about chemtrails that's going on in our neighborhood. And if you watch on a pretty day, you'll see the chemtrail go up. When the chemtrails go up, that smoke, those chemtrails, and it bring all kind of diseases by, and it mess with your mind. What America needs, we need melted. These shots that was taken have messed with people's body and mind. The nurse that fainted, that was show. But what I'm saying to you tonight, the way we have to do is deal with the hospitals and the drugs that's coming in from out of the other countries that's killing our youth, taking crack cocaine. This is a part of destroying the nation. This is not building the nation. This is tearing the nation down from the inside. You got drug addicts. You got heroin addicts. You got alcoholics, and they won't leave it alone. They done made it legal. Alcohol is legal. Marijuana is legal. And they're trying to make cocaine legal. These are drugs that will kill the body and the mind. With the pills, they said, well, send the pills out. The research on the pills is 35 women can die taking the pill, the birth control pill. So we're on a collision of destroying our youth. All that the pills don't get, the drugs, the dope, we're doing it with the gun. They have released guns. They found a kid, 12, 13, 14, they all had guns. What they doing with a gun at 12 years old? Boy coming to school and shot the teacher. And they fired the principal. We're going out the world backwards. If we're going to be what we ought to be, we got to look at this thing from a spiritual point of view, from a point of view that your daughter, that you can't assume, your son, you can't assume, they may not be there when you go get them in the evening, because we got people that are mental sick. They're sick in the mind. So they are sick, so they need help. So we the government needs to set up a program to deal with the mental part of our nation is sick, them that are not mental. How can all these people, the boy that did the shooting, he was sick. The one that did the shooting down in Texas, he was sick. The one that did the shooting in Detroit, he was sick. So why so many sick people was able to get guns? That's the question. Where do we go from here? Think about it. You're on your way shopping. The young lady, she's on her way shopping at Walmart. They were shooting. So it's too many guns and enough people speaking out. Where is the clergy? Where is the politician? The politician is a part of the problem. You know, in Chicago, we just finished a campaign for mayor. Now, I want to tell you, 1968, Dr. King came to town and marched for open housing. He marched in Marquette Park, Gage Park, and Cicero for open housing. Blacks could not live in Gage Park or Marquette Park. Blacks could not live in Cicero. After Dr. King began to march in Chicago, the political daily and his political machine said, "Dr. King, get out of town, and we're not gonna have any protection for you." Dr. King marched on the West Side with the West Side organization, Justin Robertson, and all those the West Side organization. They marched for jobs and for open housing. Dr. King stayed on the West Side of Chicago. The whole SCLC staff, along with his wife, was on the West Side of Chicago. That's where he was staying. And they refused to give him protection. If you're a citizen, you're supposed to be protected by the police department. After Dr. King wasn't protected from the city of Chicago, the young people had to have a meeting. Reverend Dunlap, Reverend Al Sampson, who was ordained by Dr. King, met Reverend David Coleman, Reverend Thurston, Reverend Edmund Blair. They met at 40 North Ashland, on the West Side of Chicago, summoned every gang leader in Chicago to be at that meeting. Now, I want to help you out because I want to tell what happened. You had the Blackstone Rangers from the South Side. You had the Disciples from the South Side. From the North Side, you had the Latin Kings, the Cobblestones. And on the West Side, you had the situation on the West Side. So you have all the teen nations together had never been together to talk. It was like a convention of teen nations. On the South Side, West Side, North Side, all in the city, they were together meeting about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. On the north side, the west side, the north side, west side, east side, and in Woodlawn, Lundell, all of that. And on the west side, we had the young brothers on the west side. Young brothers on the south side, young brothers on the east side. And the brothers were there talking about, we got to protect Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Come to Chicago for open housing. And we had some black businesses that was with Dr. King. We marched for a solid month of March 19. Check it out. 1968, Dr. King was in Chicago, March. On the west side, the vice lord. We had all the vice lords. It's a different group, but all the groups agreed they was going with Martin Luther King Jr. in Chicago. And they protect Dr. King 24/7. They were there. And when they marched as the vanguard for Dr. Martin Luther King in Cicero. when the whites didn't want blacks to march in Cicero. Whites didn't want Dr. King and the SCLC to march in Gage Park and march in Market Park. This is Chicago in 1968, okay, where the mayor already said for Dr. King to get out of town. But Dr. King didn't get out of town. He rallied with the church members, those preachers that weren't afraid, that and met with Dr. King on 47 with South Park then, but now it's King Drive. We were there. We were at State Street at a church, Clay Evans Church, on a church on the west side, Dr. Brooks Church. So we met at these churches in March. That's what we did. So when Dr. King said that it got to be some changes, that's what he meant, and that's what got to happen. And this is what Dr. King said.
We must also realize that the problems of racial injustice and economic injustice cannot be solved without a radical redistribution.
There's got to be a change economically. That means at the city hall in Washington, D.C., the money that they spending, that money needs to go to Mississippi. Right now, Mississippi is fighting for water and to pick the garbage up right now. And then you see what's happening in all these southern cities. It's a problem with white folks don't want to accept blacks. And some of them in Houston, in Dallas. And it's a problem. But only way for us to solve that problem is for us to come together. And Dr. King always said that. So once you come together, can't nobody ride your back.
We must also realize that the problems of racial injustice and economic injustice cannot be solved without a radical redistribution of political and economic power.
We read one day, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But if a man doesn't have a job or an income, he has neither life nor liberty, and the possibility for the pursuit of happiness. He merely exists. Estimated that we spend $322,000.
Now, Dr. King was speaking about how much money we spend on war, how much money we spend on tanks and bombs. They just shot down a drone, and that was a $1 million drone that he shot down. Where that money come from? That's taxpayers' money. So the money that's spent for war, what they spent for Vietnam, they spent trillions of dollars for Vietnam, trillions of dollars for the Gulf War, and trillions of dollars they spent for the war in Ukraine. That ain't even our war. And the trillions of dollars spent over in Israel, they're giving tank planes to Israel to fight some other people, and they ain't got nothing but sticks and rocks. So this thing got to level off. This is what Dr. King talking about. The money being spent not on education, the money is not being spent on trying to take these people that are crazy, they're messed with their mental ill because of what's going to happen. And after this COVID came and the shot, the people really sick. Young folks, mind messed up. People got dementia. They didn't have that back in the day. People got autism. All this is because they're messing with the food, processing food in laboratories. And they're giving you pills for headaches, pills for everything. The lady told me she have a high blood pressure pill. She has a pill for rheumatism. And she's a bitch out there only got here a Viagra pill for women. That's sick and insane. That's people driving you into being a zombie. Let me say it again. You can't think on your own. Kids getting guns. Their parents buying them machine guns and taking guns. For $150, you can take an automatic and make it a machine gun. And these guns is in the city. Guns is in the suburbs of these cities. These guns are in the city and they transfer in the schools. They're in the colleges. You go to the mall to get a dress, you might get shot, get killed. You might go to church and don't come out. And it's been proven kids have gone, went to school, the grammar for education. You got to run the school because your kid is shot. And this is happening over and over and over. It seems like the Republican and it lies on the political part. It's a lie on the Democrat and the Republic. It's a lie on the Congress. It's a lie on the Justice Department. It's a lie on the Supreme Court. It should be a law made where these guns is took out of the neighborhood. These kids, 12 and 13, got access to guns, got access to crack cocaine. But it's all right as long as somebody making money. The rich getting richer. The poor getting poor. And they dying at a young age. And that's what Dr. King was saying.
We must also realize that the problems of racial injustice and economic injustice cannot be solved without a radical redistribution of political and economic power.
We read one day, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But if a man doesn't have a job or an income, he has neither life nor liberty and the possibility for the pursuit of happiness. He merely exists. Estimated that we spend $322,000 for each enemy we kill in Vietnam, while we spend in the so-called war on poverty in America only about $53 for each person classified as poor. The promises of the Great Society have been shot down on the battlefield of Vietnam, making the poor, white and Negro, bear the heaviest burdens both at the front and at home.
The other thing I want you to understand is this, that it didn't cost the nation one penny to integrate lunch counts. It didn't cost the nation one penny to guarantee the right to vote. But now we are dealing with issues that cannot be solved without the nation spending billions of dollars and undergoing a radical redistribution of economic power.
Yes, yes.
All labor has dignity.
Yes.
But you are doing another thing. You are reminding not only Memphis, but you are reminding the nation that it is a crime for people to live in this rich nation and receive starvation wages. America's opportunity to help bridge the gulf between the haves and the have-nots. And the question is whether America will do it. There's nothing new about poverty. What is new is that we now have the techniques and the resources to get rid of poverty. The real question is whether we have the will.
At the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. But not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. Not only that, they provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. Not only that, today many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they are the very people telling the black man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. Now, this is what we are faced with, and this is the reality. Now, when we come to Washington in this campaign, we are coming to get our check. I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. As I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Kennisonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with the pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. Don't let anybody take your manhood. Be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. It's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure, high, and clean. But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and beautiful.
What is the relationship between this and the reality of the Negro masses?
Well, to leave Martin out of it for a moment. Martin's very rare, very great man. Martin's rare for two reasons. Part because, just because he is. And because he's a real Christian and he really believes in nonviolence. He's arrived at something in himself, which permits him, allows him to do it. And he still has great moral authority in the South. There's none whatever in the North. Poor Martin has gone through God knows what kind of hell to awaken the American conscience. But Martin has reached the end of his rope. There's something that Martin can't do. Martin's only one man. Martin can't solve the nation's central problem by himself. There are lots of people, lots of black people, I mean now, who don't go to church no more and don't listen to Martin, you know, and who anyway are themselves produced by civilization, which is always glorified violence, unless the Negro had the gun. So that Martin is undercut by the performance of the country. The country is only concerned about nonviolence if it seems that I'm going to get violent. They're not worried about nonviolence if it's Salah Adam Musharraf.
Then, what do you see deep in the recesses of your own mind as the future of our nation? And I ask that question in that way because I think that the future of the Negro and the future of the nation are linked.
They're inseparable.
Yeah. Now, what do you see? Are you essentially optimistic or pessimistic? And I really don't want to put words in your mouth because what I really want to find out is what you really believe.
Well, I'm both glad and sorry you asked me that question. I'll do my best to answer it. I can't be a pessimist because I'm alive. To be a pessimist means that you have agreed that human life is an academic matter. So I'm forced to be an optimist. I'm forced to believe that we can survive whatever we must survive. But the Negro in this country, the future of the Negro in this country is precisely as bright or as dark as the future of the country. It is entirely up to the American people and our representatives. It is entirely up to the American people whether or not they're going to face and deal with and embrace this stranger whom they malign so long. What white people have to do is try to find out in their own hearts why it is necessary to have a nigger in the first place. And I'm not a nigger. I'm a man. But if you think I'm a nigger, it means you need it. The question you've got to ask yourself, the white population of this country has got to ask itself, north and south, because it's one country, and for a Negro, there's no difference in the north and the south. There's just a difference in the way they castrate you. But the fact of the castration is the American fact. If I'm not the Negro here, and if you invented him, you, the white people, invented him, then you've got to find out why.
Well,
and the future of the country depends on that, whether or not it's able to ask that question.
As a Negro and as an American, I can only hope that America has the strength and the capacity to ask and answer that question in a affirmative and constructive way.
To face that question.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Captain.
He's got the whole head in his head.
about his choose to be when I'm in the truth. How often that is true to have allowed the material to be my issue. While his children to be part with you. To have allowed your mentality throughout your
of green. I see them blue for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue, clouds of white, bright blessed days, dark sacred nights, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the skies, also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, say, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry. I watch them grow, they'll learn much more than I'll ever know, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Oh, yeah.
We have to stay focused, and we still have to understand. And something that we have to find out that's happening with us, and we have to understand the breakthrough that we need to do in order to move to the next level. You know, I listened to Malcolm talk about the house nigga and the field nigga. And y'all said, that's kind of bad. No, Malcolm has said that we have to come together. And as Malcolm went through what he went through, he learned that we have to be able to reach out to each other and stop fighting each other and talking negative stuff and then positive stuff. And that's what we have to do. And the spirit of Dr. King is with us. What I want to say to you tonight, Dr. King's spirit is real. Racism is still real in America, and blacks don't even see it. They have lost their way. And the way they find our way is go to the next level. Psalms 92 and Psalms 23 and Psalm 72, I want you to read as we get ready to open up, because I want to say this hymn. Weather-wise, their ancestors, their ancestors are going to be moving on the plane and letting us know some things that's going on, So, storms and floods, back to back. I'd already sent the prophets out. My new book called The Have Has Never Been Told. The Have Has Never Been Told the Truth. So I want the truth to be told. And I want you to be involved in the truth. Let me say it again. The Have Has Never Been Told. And what I mean by that, it's things that have been hid from us. These things have lied to us and kept us to another level. Even our ancestors were lied to. And all this happened to you. Some of you, I don't want to listen back to King, I want to listen to Malcolm, but you got to look where we come from, to where we at. We tonight, as I talk to you in Mississippi, Arkansas, Louisiana, Texas, we standing on the back of our ancestors. And I was in the spirit, and the ancestors, the white ancestors come to me, they said, I said, why y'all in? This is what they say. They know we lie. We've been lying. And they accepting the lie. Our ancestors, our black ancestors, then stop accepting the lie and stand up and get yourself together, You, doctor, lawyer, school teacher, whatever you might be, you're standing on the back of blacks that paid the bill, but they didn't get paid. They did the work, they didn't get paid. And it takes Malcolm to say it. You know, a lot of people, why you play Malcolm? Because I want you to listen to the song.
To understand this, you have to go back to what young brother here referred to as the house Negro and the field Negro, back during slavery. There was two kinds of slaves. There was the house Negro and the field Negro. The house Negro, they lived in the house with master. They dressed pretty good. They ate good because they ate his food, because he left. They lived in the attic or the basement, but still they lived near their master. And they loved their master more than the master loved himself. They would give their life to save their master's house quicker than the master would. The house Negro, if the master said, we got a good house here, the house Negro said, yeah, we got a good house here. Never the master said we, he said we. That's how you can tell a house Negro. If the master's house caught on fire, the house Negro would fight harder to put the blaze out than the master would. If the master got sick, the house Negro would say, what's the matter, boss? We sick. We sick. He identified himself with his master more than his master identified with himself. And if you came to the house Negro and said, let's run away, let's escape, let's separate, that house Negro would look at you and say, man, you crazy. What you mean separate? Where is there a better house than this? Where can I wear better clothes than this? Where can I eat better food than this? That was that house Negro. In those days he was called a house nigger. And that's what we call him today, because we still got some house niggers running around here. This modern house Negro loves his master. He wants to live near him. He'll pay three times as much as the house is worth just to live near his master. And then brag about, I'm the only Negro out here.
the only one on my job. I'm the only one in this school. You're nothing but a house Negro. And if someone come to you right now and say, let's separate, you say the same thing that the house Negro said on the plantation. What you mean, separate? From America? This good white man? Where you gonna get a better job than you get here? I mean, this is what you say. I ain't left nothing in Africa. That's what you say. Why, you left your mind in Africa. On that same plantation, there was the field Negro. The field Negro, those were the masses. There was always more Negroes in the field than there was Negroes in the house. The Negro in the field caught hell. He ate leftovers. In the house, they ate high up on the hog. The Negro in the field didn't get nothing but what was left of the insides of the hog. They call them chitlins nowadays. In those days, they call them what they were, guts. That's what you were, a gut eater. And some of you are still gut eaters. The field Negro was beaten from morning till night. He lived in a shack, in a hut. He wore cast-off clothes. And he hated his master. I say he hated his master. He was intelligent. That house Negro loved his master. But that field Negro, remember, they were in the majority. And they hated the master. When the house caught on fire, he didn't try and put it out. That field Negro prayed for a wind, for a breeze. When the master got sick, the field Negro prayed that he died. If someone come to the field Negro and said, let's separate, let's run, he didn't say, where are we going? He said, any place is better than here. You got field Negroes in America today. I'm a field Negro. The masses are the field Negroes. When they see this man's house on fire, you don't hear these little Negroes talking about our government is in trouble. They say the government is in trouble. Imagine a Negro, our government. I even heard one say, our astronauts. They won't even let him near the plant. And our astronauts, our Navy, that's a Negro that's out of his mind. That's a Negro that's out of his mind. Just as the slave master in that day used Tom, the house Negro, to keep the field Negroes in check, the same old slave master today has Negroes who are nothing but modern Uncle Toms, 20th century Uncle Toms, to keep you and me in check, keep us under control, keep us passive and peaceful in nonviolent. That's Tom making you nonviolent. It's like when you go to the dentist and the man is going to take your tooth. You're going to fight him when he start pulling. So they squirt some stuff in your jaw called Novocaine to make you think they're not doing anything to you. So you sit there and because you got all that Novocaine in your jaw, you suffer peacefully. Blood running all down your jaw. And you don't know what's happening. because someone has taught you to suffer peacefully. The white man do the same thing to you in the street. When you want to put knots on your head and take advantage of you and don't have to be afraid of you fighting back, to keep you from fighting back, he get these old religious Uncle Toms to teach you and me that just like Novocaine, suffer peacefully. Don't stop suffering, just suffer peacefully. As Reverend Cleek pointed out, let your blood flow in the streets. This is a shame. And you know he's a Christian preacher. If it's a shame to him, you know what it is to me. Because nothing in our book, the Quran, as you call it, Koran, teaches us to suffer peacefully. Our religion teaches us to be intelligent, be peaceful, be courteous, obey the law, respect everyone. But if someone puts his hand on you, send him to the cemetery. That's a good religion. In fact, that's that old-time religion. That's the one that Ma and Pa used to talk about. An eye for an eye, and a tooth for a tooth, and a head for a head, and a life for a life. That's a good religion. And then anybody, no one resents that kind of religion being taught but a wolf who intends to make you his meal. This is the way it is with the white man in America. He's a wolf and you a sheep. Anytime a shepherd, a pastor, teach you and me not to run from the white man, and at the same time teachers don't fight the white man, he's a traitor to you and me. Don't lay down our life all by itself. No. Preserve your life. It's the best thing you got. And if you got to give it up, let it be even Stephen. The slave master took Tom and dressed him well and fed him well and even gave him a little education, a little education. Gave him a long coat and a top hat and made all the other slaves look up to him. Then he used Tom to control them. The same strategy that was used in those days is used today by the same white man. He take a Negro, so-called Negro, and make him prominent. Build him up. Publicize him. Make him a celebrity. And then he becomes a spokesman for Negroes and a Negro leader. I would like to just mention one thing else quickly, and that is The method that the white man uses, how the white man uses these big guns or Negro leaders against the black revolution. They're not a part of the black revolution. They're used against the black revolution. When Martin Luther King failed to desegregate Albany, Georgia, the civil rights struggle in America reached its low point. King became bankrupt almost as a leader. Plus, even financially, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference was in financial trouble. Plus, it was in trouble, period, with the people when they failed to desegregate Albany, Georgia. Other Negro civil rights leaders of so-called national stature became fallen idols. As they became fallen idols, began to lose their prestige and influence, local Negro leaders began to stir up the masses. In Cambridge, Maryland, Gloria Richardson in Danville, Virginia, and other parts of the country, local leaders begin to stir up our people at the grassroots level. This was never done by these Negroes whom you recognize of national stature. They controlled you, but they never incited you or excited you. They controlled you. They contained you. They kept you on the plantation. As soon as King failed in Birmingham, Negroes took to the streets. King got out and went out to California to a big rally and raised about, I don't know how many thousands of dollars. Come to Detroit and had a march and raised some more thousands of dollars. And recall, right after that, Wilkins attacked King, accused King and the Corps of starting trouble everywhere and then making the NAACP get him out of jail and spend a lot of money, and then he accused King and Corps of raising all the money and not paying it back. This happened. I got it in documented evidence in the newspaper. Roy started attacking King, and King started attacking Roy, and Farmer started attacking both of them. And as these Negroes of national stature begin to attack each other, they begin to lose their control of the Negro masses. And Negroes was out there in the streets. They was talking about, we're going to march on Washington. By the way, right at that time, Birmingham had exploded, and the Negroes in Birmingham, remember, they also exploded. They began to stab the crackers in the back and buzz them upside their head. Yes, they did. That's when Kennedy sent in the troops down in Birmingham. So, and right after that, Kennedy got on the television.
But if not, there was a day when many of the Israelites found themselves in bondage in Babylon. There was a king of Babylon by the name of Nebuchadnezzar. You read about him a good deal in the book of Daniel, and it stands as an epic that will remain stenciled on the mental sheets of unfolding generations. Nebuchadnezzar was a mighty king. And when he ruled, he ruled. And when he issued an order, he meant business. And Nebuchadnezzar issued an order. He made a golden image, and his order was that everybody under the reign of his kingship had to bow before that golden image and worship it. Now, those of you who read the Bible remember that story. One day Nebuchadnezzar called in the judges and the governors and the sheriffs, and they had a dedicatory service for this golden image. And then he said to them, I'm instructing you to see that everybody bows before this golden image. There were three young men around there. One's name was Shadrach. The other one's name was Meshach. And the other name was Abednego. And they answered, and I read it from the scripture, and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this manner. If it be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But if not,
be it known unto thee, O King, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. Now I want you to notice first here that these young men practiced civil disobedience. Civil disobedience is the refusal to abide by an order of the government or of the state or even of the court that your conscience tells you is unjust. Civil disobedience is based on a commitment to conscience. In other words, one who practices civil disobedience is obedient to what he considers a higher law. And then there comes a time when a moral man can obey a law which his conscience tells him is unjust. And I tell you this morning, my friends, that history has moved on. Great moments have often come forth because there were those individuals in every age and every generation who were willing to say, I will be obedient to a higher law. These men were saying, I must be disobedient to a king in order to be obedient to the king. And those people who so often criticize those of us who come to those moments when we must practice civil disobedience never remember that even right here in America, in order to get free from the oppression and the colonialism of the British Empire, our nation practiced civil disobedience. For what represented civil disobedience more than the Boston Tea Party? And never forget that everything that Hitler did in Germany was legal. It was legal to do everything that Hitler did to the Jews. It was a law in Germany that Hitler issued himself that it was wrong and illegal to aid and comfort a Jew in Hitler's Germany. But I tell you, if I had lived in Hitler's Germany with my attitude, I would have openly broken that law. I would have practiced civil disobedience. And so it is important to see that there are times when a man-made law is out of harmony with the moral law of the universe. There are times when human laws are out of harmony with eternal and divine laws. And when that happens, you have an obligation to break it. And I'm happy that in breaking it, I have some good company. I have Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. I have Jesus and Socrates. And I have all of the early Christians who refused to bow. Now the second interesting point is that these men never doubted God and his power as they did what they did. They made it very clear that they knew that God had the power to spare them. They said that to the king. Now, we know that the God that we worship is able to deliver us. And that grew out of their experience. They had known God. They had experienced God in nature.
We know.
They knew God as the creator.
That's why we work around the clock.
And then they had seen God in history. And then they had seen God, I'm sure, in their personal lives. They never doubted God's power to deliver them. But let me move now to the basic point of the message. No, this morning, if we forget everything I said, I hope you won't forget this. Came to the point after saying our God is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace. But if he doesn't deliver us, we still are not going to bow. But if not, do you get that? And these men were saying that our faith is so deep that we've found something so dear and so precious that nothing can turn us away from it. Our God is able to deliver us, but if not, this simply means, my friends, that the ultimate test of one's faith is his ability to say, but if not. You see, there is what you may call an if faith, and there is a though faith, and the permanent faith, the lasting, the powerful faith, is the though faith. Now the if faith says, if all goes well, if life is hopeful, prosperous, and happy, if I don't have to go to jail, if I don't have to face the agonies and burdens of life, if I'm not ever called bad names because of taking a stand that I feel that I must take, if none of these things happen, then I'll have faith in God, and I'll be all right. That's the if faith. You know, a lot of people have the if faith. Jacob found himself in that dilemma once, and his faith was contingent on an if. And he said, now, if God will be with me, and if he will keep me in this way that I go, and if God will give me bread to eat and raiment to put on, that I come again to my father's house in peace, then shall the Lord be my God. That's the if faith. Jacob hadn't quite gotten to the essence of religion. There is a though faith, though. And the though faith says, though things go wrong, though evil is temporarily triumphant, though sickness comes and the cross looms, nevertheless, I'm going to believe anyway, and I'm going to have faith anyway. Though the waters thereof roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with the swelling thereof, the Lord of hosts is with us, the God of Jacob is our refuge. And old Job got to that point, and he had a though faith. He looked out, and everything that he had been taken away from him. And even his wife said to him, "Now, what you ought to do, Brother Job, is to curse God and die. God has been unkind to you. You should have let God know a long time ago that you would only follow him if he allowed you to stay rich.
Make it plain.
If he allowed your cattle to stay in place, you ought to curse him and die. No, because he hadn't treated you right. But Job said, "Honey, I'm sorry, but my faith is deeper than that. Though he slay me, yet will I trust him. My faith is a thorough faith." This is the essence of life and religion. The question is whether you have an if faith or whether you have a though faith. You know what this says in substance? That ultimately, religion is not a bargaining matter. A lot of people bargain with God. If you just let me avoid pain, God. If you allow me to be happy in all of its dimensions, if you don't allow any suffering to come, if you don't allow frustrating moments to come, then I'll be all right. I'll give you a tenth of my income, and I'll go to church, and I'll have faith in you. Religion is not a bargaining experience. It's not a commercial relationship. And you know, no great experience exists in the bargaining atmosphere. Think of friendship. Think of love. And think of marriage. These things are not based on if. They are based on though.
I was known for snapping when I sat.
These great experiences are not based on a bargaining relationship, not an if faith, but a though faith. And I'm coming to my conclusion now. And I want to say to you this morning, my friends, that somewhere along the way, you should discover something that's so dear, so precious to you, that is so eternally worthful that you will never give it up. You ought to discover some principle.
Yes, sir.
You ought to have some great faith that grips you so much that you will never give it up.
Never.
Somehow you go on and say, "I know that the God that I worship is able to deliver me, but if not, I'm going on anyhow. I'm going to stand up for it anyway." What does this mean? It means in the final analysis, you do right not to avoid hell.
Yes.
If you're doing right merely to keep from going to something that traditional theology has called hell, then you are doing right. If you do right merely to go to a condition that theologians have called heaven, you are doing right. You are doing right to avoid pain and to achieve happiness and pleasure, then you are doing right. Ultimately, you must do right because it's right to do right. You've got to say, "But if not." You must love ultimately because...
Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings. This is just doing a special short version of the cows. wanted to speak with Mr. Neely Fuller Jr. about homosexual activity. I was able to speak with him privately last week, and he shared some really interesting thoughts, and I wanted him to share that with you all briefly. I didn't want to take up too much of his time. Mr. Fuller, when I spoke with you, you said that white people tend to think of non-white people as boys and girls, and you tied that into how that relates to homosexual behavior. Could you share that with our audience so they can get a really clear picture of what you're saying?
Well, there is a system of white supremacy in place, which just means just mistreatment and domination and use of people in a royalist manner based on color. That's basically what it is. That's what racism is. It's just a variation of the of royalism, but it's based on color rather than on other things like lineage and who your father was and what your name was, I mean, 1,000 years ago, and certain sets of traditions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's what basically racism is, and it's turned out to be the most powerful form of royalism in the known universe now in the form of what we call racism and or white supremacy. Now, in any structure that's dominant, you have to dominate the people in all areas of activity. If you don't dominate them in all areas of activity, then other areas of activity will slip away from the domination factor. And you have 9 areas, according to what I have written, that will just about cover most things. I think that's adequate enough. Economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war. Now, I call sex the 8th area of activity in alphabetical order of the other areas of activity. So that just comes up as number 8. But sex is the most powerful motivating force among people next to the system of white supremacy itself. Because whatever the dominant system is, that's what people react to on the planet. So the dominant system at this particular time in history, and has been as far back as anybody can remember who's breathing now, the dominant system, that's mistreatment of people based on color, domination of people based on color. So the sexual aspect is the second most powerful motivating force rather than the first under this system, since the racist factor is the dominant motivating force among people, and sexual motivations are the second. Now, the racists, apparently, according to the evidence, have studied how people who are subject to them are motivated sexually. Now, if a male is a boy, which you are a boy, you're a little boy when you're born and whatnot, and then you get to be a bigger boy and whatnot, and at a certain point you reach what they call a certain degree of maturity, which is decided according to the social system that you have at hand, you're now entering the threshold of what they call manhood. So you go from boys to men. Females go from girls to women, and that's the normal process in most societies. So what the racists did was look at that and said, well, you when you have a system of racism, you only have one man and one woman category, and that would be the masters themselves. You can't have your victims of the system growing into manhood and womanhood. So if they start trying to be men, if they go from boys to men, now you have a problem. You have a bigger problem than you had before. When they were boys, they were completely dependent on you. They understood that they'll do your bidding, and they're easier to control. Same way with the girls who are trying to be women. But when they start thinking that they are men, you're not going to have but one man in the house of white supremacy, and he's got to be white. And you're not going to have but one woman, and she has to be white. So now it defies logic that you would allow them to go from boys to men. So if you're not going to allow them to go from boys to men, what will you allow them to do? Because they are constantly growing, they are constantly getting smarter, and they have a natural tendency to want to break away from boyhood and to become men. Say, so what you do is divert them away from wanting to become men and have, if it's a male, have him go from boyhood to femalehood. In other words, he changes his gender altogether, at least in his mind. Then he's easier to control. Then you do the same thing with the female. Take the black female, and rather than allow her to go the normal progression of things, steer her in the direction away from becoming a woman and in the direction of becoming a male. In other words, she will switch genders in her mind. Now, her body didn't switch genders, but we can probably do some things that give her the illusion that her body can be made to switch genders too. Now, when you do that, what you have is confusion. You have added confusion. And one of the best ways to control people for a long period of time, particularly if you confuse them sexually, is through confusing them sexually so that you have a male thinking he's a female or wanting to be a female, even if he's struggling and trying and whatnot and trying to do everything that a female does, but he doesn't have the physical equipment. But he's got it in his mind anyway. He's just determined that he's going to act like one and be one and do the things that females do and look at males like a female looks at males normally. And then over in the female column, have the female do the same thing. Only thing about it, she's not going to try to grow into womanhood. She's going to try to do everything that she sees males doing, including in the bedroom. Try to become an artificial male. And she can do this in her mind because the mind is very flexible. A person can actually think that they are a bird if they want to. But before they try to fly or jump off a building, it's best that they get their equipment for doing so. You know. So that's the way that works. And when you can get people on that roll and when you have people subject to you, you can always propagandize anything. You can make anything look like it's the fashion because you set the rules for the society. So that's what's going on. I tried to be as comprehensive as I possibly could in that description, and I hope that people could understand what was being said.
Yes, sir.
So that's what we have now. We're heading in that direction now, full steam ahead.
And when I spoke with you, I said that, you know, the counter-argument that I frequently hear is that, well, there are a lot of white people who are also participating in so-called homosexual activity, and, you know, this is not something where they're just trying to trick black people into doing it. You have people who are born so-called gay or homosexual, and, you know, this is no trick at all. If it was, you wouldn't see all these white people going around and doing it and being mistreated because they are participating in these so-called homosexual acts. What would your view on that be?
Depends on how it plays out in the end. Now, if the system of white supremacy remains intact, then that will prove the supposition just outlined. That will prove that it's valid, that it is designed basically to support what is already in place. Otherwise, you would have the system of white supremacy would go out of business. There would be no reason to keep it in business. If the white people were serious about really getting rid of racism and getting rid of what they call all of the sexual and gender categories and all like that, because racism is an artificial category. See, just because people are of different colors doesn't say that they are members of a race. That's an artificial construct. No one is supposed to be a member of a race. That's something completely made up. So if you can do the same thing with gender. You can do the same thing with a lot of things. But you have to wait until it reaches a certain point where you've got enough evidence to prove the proposition that you made in the first place. Now, like I say, this is my concept of the way things are going because there is still a system of racism in place. Now, if racism is still in place, when all of the so-called anti-sexual, that's what I call it, behavior,
yes,
comes to full fruition and everybody's accepting of it, everybody's participating in it or embracing it or parading it around and saying that it's the best thing ever discovered since ever, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, and you still have a system of racism in place, then that will have proved the supposition, because ordinarily all of racism would disappear. But see, it's designed to lure. Now, here's where I based that on, the luring part. In the history of the system of white supremacy, there's a thing called whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
It was very popular, the use of it. Now, if you are a practiced deceiver, one thing that you know about the science and the art of deception, you cannot deceive people into doing things unless you are doing quite a bit of it yourself. If you're going to be what you call a real arch deceiver, and the white supremacists have proven that they are arch deceivers, they are very skillful at deception. So in order to deceive people, you can't get people to drink whiskey, and you're sitting there never drinking any of it yourself. So there's some historical record of this.
Mm-hmm.
So what they'll do, a deceiver will sit there and practice drinking whiskey under controlled conditions. You know, take a little sip, know exactly where the point is where you get good and drunk or where you don't get good and drunk. Then once you learn what they say, and some people brag about it in bars and whatnot, said, hey, I can drink you under the table, meaning they can outdrink you, that you will drink. I mean, that they will drink and you will drink. But when they drink, they don't get drunk.
Mm-hmm.
But you wind up drunk. Many males who have tried to deceive females into sexual activity, you know, back in the days when whiskey was a bigger thing than dope, used to get into the booth in the restaurant and start that process. Say, now what I'll do, I don't know she's not willing really, but she'll be willing before the night's over because I'm going to get her to drink some of this stuff that I brought with me.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll be drinking and she'll be drinking. He'll take a sip, she'll take a sip. Next thing you know, she's willing to go along with anything. She doesn't know what she's doing. But he does. Now, many a person, particularly pimps, understand that thing very well. Now, it's the same way with whiskey as it was used, according to the record of white supremacists themselves, in dealing with people who are called Indians. Sit down, Chief. We're going to have a Thanksgiving Day. We're going to give thanks for all of the wonderful things that have been done for both me and you by our Maker, by the great spirits. And in fact, I brought some spirits with me. It's in a bottle. You never had anything like this before, but you will want it after you get it. It's called fire water. It's full of spirits. It'll give you spirit like you have never had before, Chief. And the Chief said, well, what's wrong with just pure water from the river, from the great streams of our lands? Say, oh, yeah, but you never had nothing like this. This is something we made in a factory. It's got water in it. No mistake about that. But we got a little alcohol and a few other stuff, a little other stuff that I've added here. It'll pep you up, give you another perspective on looking at the mountains altogether. Might be good stuff. So he gives it to the Chief. And at the same time, now, the Chief is a little suspicious. So he's drinking right along with the Chief. So that means everything must be okay. So he's drinking. I'm drinking. Next thing you know, the Chief is under the table. Chief's not used to it.
And
the white supremacist, while he's drunk, or when he begins to come out of the stupor, says, okay, Chief, I got some paper here I want you to sign. I'm going to give you $22 for Manhattan. Now, when the Chief really gets sober, see, now he's angry. He wants to go on the war path. But he's already signed everything away. And what was the instrument for doing it? Deception through an act of using whiskey. Now, the whiskey you know, that's working all over the world, and starting to do it in South Africa, in Thailand, and other places and whatnot, is sex and anti-sex. Oh, you don't need to be a female all the time. After all, females have to go through a lot of agony. Wouldn't you like to be like your brother? Well, I don't have the equipment of my brother. Oh, well, you can pretend that you have it. I got some stuff I can sell you in the store. Strap-ons, you name it. And you just get it in your head that you should be a male. Because males can get things done. They got privileges that females don't have. And you say, well, you know, I don't particularly, you know, the lady says, I don't particularly want to be a male and all like that. Well, it's something, you know, have you tried it? You don't know it. Don't knock it if you ain't tried it. And knowing black people, particularly in this area of the world, we like anything that looks like it's bordering on something new, because we're so tired of everything that ain't new. And they won't know, we'll go for it. We'll pioneer, you know, we'll lead the parade, which is what they try to get us to do. Now, you can't get a decent place to stay. You can't get a decent job. But if you want to lead the gay parade and you're black, they will reserve a spot for you. If you don't believe it, try it. That's what I mean by evidence of what I'm talking about. The record shows this. And they start with who? The youngest, okay, always work with them in the choir and churches and whatnot. And they do it through the most intelligent of black people. They don't start with the fellow sitting there with the wine bottle in front of the liquor store who's 40 years old. Because he's a black male. That's why he's drinking. He's been disallowed to ever be a man, and he knows he'll never be one. He'll always be a boy. And that is tearing him up inside. That's why he left his wife, left his children, and all like that. I mean, he gave up on everything and started drinking. That's why he's sitting on the curb out there. Because he's still struggling to be a man, and he will fight people right there in that parking lot about his manhood. So you can't hardly get to him, even when he's drunk. You say, oh, man, get away from me. Don't be feeling on me. I got this big hip woman out here, you know, this big leg woman out here, you know. You know, if I want to do something like that, that's who I'm going to get with. I don't want you. Get your old rough, dirty hands off of me, you know. Man, I like women, you know. I'm a man, you know. I'm a man. Look at me. I'm a man, you know. I don't want no man. Even when I was in the joint, I didn't want one. See, that's the way he'll talk. He's 40 years old, okay. But what do? They go around and get the teachers and the guys who are going into the ministry, and that's where they spread that gospel among black intellectuals. Because the street dude, see, he's still struggling. I mean, he ain't going to never make it, because you can't be a man under the system of white supremacy. You got to remain a boy or turn into a female.
Mm-hmm.
By turning into a female, I mean having the kind of ideas about the opposite sex that a female has,
mm-hmm.
but you're a male. But you've got the same idea about a male as your sister has. You're trying to outdo her. You're trying to take your sister's boyfriend. That's the way the white supremacists want it.
My co-host, I believe is here. She is a non-white female, and she is 10 years old, but she has been studying your work, and she understands that there is a system of racism, white supremacy. I was hoping she could ask some questions as well. Are you there, Justice?
Hello?
Yep, we can hear you.
Okay. Sorry about the misunderstanding. Okay.
Do you have some questions you would like to ask Mr. Fuller?
Not at this moment.
Okay.
Well, she can think about what I said. See, here again, codification is about not taking Neely Fuller's word for anything. In fact, you're not supposed to. You're supposed to just walk around and take a look. See, just don't jump into things. Just walk around and take a look and see if it doesn't start adding up. Because that's what I do. I don't jump to a conclusion and then go around trying to bombard people with the conclusion I jumped to. I just go around and see if there's evidence of what I think might be happening. In fact, I challenge, you might say, if you want to use that term, I say questioning, it's not a challenge. If I have a concept, I'll go around and question the concept that I have before I even reveal it. And see, you know, well, something is going on. Now, why is this happening? Why here? Why now? How come it wasn't happening, you know, 60 years ago? Why is it happening now? And why is it happening involving black people on this scale? See what I mean? And I'm saying now, someone must have thought it up, or it wouldn't be happening, because it's something that's happening between people. And anything that black people do, the white supremacists always have something to do with it. Otherwise, it's not going to be happening in the first place. If it's something that's bad for their business, they will cut it off. They'll put a stop to it. But if it's something that they think is good for their business, they'll not only let it roll, they will support it. Now, I've heard white supremacists argue about white people engaging in what we call homosexuality or gayism or lesbianism and whatnot. And that's another thing. Even the terms don't add up. Because I've even asked the questions, which is what you do in any kind of research. Why are gay people called gay? Nobody answers that. Is it named after a person, Mr., you know, Frank Joshua J., gay or what, you know, who started it, you know, or who promoted it, who had an organization by that name and it was named after him? I can see that. But it's just, you know, all of a sudden, gay. What does that mean? And then you say gays and lesbians. Then you add another one, transgender. Gays, it started off just being gays, then lesbians, then transgender. So one legitimate question is, where is the cutoff point? See what I mean? And another thing, is a lesbian gay? Why do you say gays and lesbians? I mean, you know, these are just questions, logical
right.
questions.
Right.
If you got a big sign out and you're carrying it around and telling everybody to join in and support it and contribute some money to it and all like that, people should know what they're contributing money to. You know? And another thing, where is the payoff? Now, if it's an improvement over what we call traditional sex, because they call it alternative, that's another term. This is a alternative, you know, meaning something that's different from the usual or something that's various, a variation of the basic. Well, then you ask several questions there. Well, is there anything incorrect about the basic? And a person might say, no. But this is an alternative, of course, you know, for people who just got tired of the basics, want to do something different. What's wrong with variety? What's wrong with diversity, diverting from one thing to another? Well, maybe nothing, but let's examine it. Examine it for what? To see if it is an improvement over what you already had. And if so, justify it by showing, by example, where's the improvement, which one of these, see, when you start talking about homosexuality or lesbianism, these are not just abstract words. These are talking about you have to do certain things to qualify. So what are these things that you do? And which one of them is an improvement over what has been done? That's just like a person might come around and say, well, hey, you know, I used to kind of be attracted to people, you know. I've had several wives and all like that. Even had a little incest, I mean, every now and then, I mean, you know. And But I finally came to the conclusion that people ain't where it's at all. I'm in the bear.
Hmm.
You know? You say, what do you mean you're in the bear? I'm into bear. I go out in the woods and I chase me down a bear. The bear ain't chasing me no more. I'm chasing them. I have found that that's a wonderful alternative. I mean, after all, man, I mean, let's face it. Look at these marriages and divorces and whatnot. I don't have no trouble with the bears. I mean, I used to didn't think of anything about bears except just going to the ball game, you know. But I found out that, man, if you really snuggle up to a bear, you'll never want to go back doing nothing else. Now, where'd you get that idea? Well, it just came to me one night. Tired of these women. In fact, people was telling me, well, if you don't like women, get you a man. Well, I'm tired of them, too. So I'm in the bear. See, now, you might laugh, but it's going to come to that, if it ain't already. Because there are some people into that.
Mm.
Yeah, they call it, what do you call it, bestiality?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, see, I mean, that might be a wholesale thing in about another 10 years. They say, well, hey, well, you know, this gay and lesbian thing about played out, man, ain't where it's at. You know? Man, everybody's trying to preserve the bears now. You know, I'm trying to get me a panda. You know? Now, what is the point that I'm making? It's a lots of things that the mind can do. The mind is extremely inventive and extremely flexible. But the basic question is this type of activity an improvement, and if so, why? Otherwise, why are you coming around asking black people who don't even have a roof over their head that this is what they should be pushing now?
Mm-hmm.
They don't even have a decent school or a decent job. But now you want them to join the gay rights movement, and that should be their priority. We should drop everything else and make that a priority. I don't see the justification at all.
Mm-hmm.
They have some white people who came around years ago and started saying, calling it the rainbow. Kind of, you might excuse the pun, tailgating Jesse Jackson's rainbow push for civil rights. And then they got to saying, well, what is this all about? And when the question was asked, they answered by saying, well, it's another division of civil rights.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all the same thing. Discriminating against gays is the same as discriminating against blacks. And a lot of black people say, wait a minute, it may sound like the same thing, but it ain't the same thing. But they were able to shout all of that down. It is the same thing. Why is it the same thing? Because I said so. White supremacy in action again. Always, because I said so. See, but, you know, but that don't, you know, it sounds